50208 Media.
And now, on with the show.
Hello, 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 all you lovely witches, wizards, and warlocks, and welcome to another fantastic and spoopy episode of Film Fracas. I am Shannon Blanche the Spoopy Cat Widener, and with me, as always, is this lovely and chaotic and always insightful cast of characters, Phoenix, the ghost of River Phoenix Zarola.
Oh, no.
The ghost of River Phoenix Zarola.
Whoa. I'm going to give y'all your own names.
Okay.
Let's sure. See. Robbie.
Witches.
DeShazer.
Witches.
And witches. Carter.
Good to be here. I'm kind of sleepy.
Spookyards.
Spookyards? Nah.
Spookyards.
Graveyards.
Graveyards.
Spoop something in your yard and
haunted haunted graveyards.
Spoop something in your yard and add it. Okay, we'll go for it. And Carter,
spoop something in your yard and add it. Ooh.
Oh my God.
All right, I'm going to leave now.
Good.
We're just going to have to start over.
I want to apologize to the Phoenix family.
Those Phoenix stands out there. Yeah.
They're just
no,
like...
I'm talking the River Phoenix family.
Oh, the River Phoenix family?
The family of River Phoenix Zarola?
Yes, the Phoenix family. Joaquin.
Oh, Joaquin and...
yeah, and
not
all that.
Not the French, like...
Leaf?
Synthy band Leaf, yeah. With the guy who's also married Joaquin, to Sofia Coppola.
So yeah, not them.
Not them either.
Not the Fall Out Boy song.
Wait, did somebody say Coppola?
And
Marvel's
not
cinema?
Fox. Oh, yeah.
Marvel is not cinema.
Right,
it is despicable theme parks.
We're not going to talk about that.
That will not be addressed in this episode, but
what will
be addressed
to do with Halloween.
In this episode is, Phoenix, take it away.
Best score.
Hey.
It is our final four.
If that surprised you, you haven't listened to a season of this show
Go
before.
Go back and listen to another season.
Or you didn't read the episode title, I guess.
Four score. And seven podcasts seasons ago.
This is now our seventh season. You should know its score now.
Sorry, I'm just very upset with Phoenix right now.
I'm having a moment against him.
I feel like if that joke hadn't been made, it should have been by now. So
it has. It has been made.
It is what
by
it is,
you
Phoenix.
In season one.
That's you're right.
Also again in season two.
But we have more pressing things to address. And that's Carter's tweeting now.
I am.
Carter's
Ooh,
tweeting now.
That's right.
I am tweeting
right
now.
Right now.
Not right now.
He's
right
live
this second.
Tweeting all of this.
Oh, he could. Carter's canceled. He tweeted something he shouldn't have.
Oh dang. It was fun while it lasted, guys.
Yeah I'm sorry.
I'll crawl out of my hole in
see
10
yourself
years.
Out.
Speaking of accidental tweets, did you guys see the ACL, the Twitter account, was accidentally used by a social media intern who thought it was their own account and responded
no.
to a Trump tweet?
Ooh.
Oh,
from the official ACL TV, so like the TV show, not even like just the festival. The
oh,
official.
Oh my.
And responded to a Trump tweet saying, "Can't wait to see your fat ass behind bars."
Honestly, on brand.
It's consistent with what ACL
with the
is
ACL
putting out.
Message,
so I guess
even,
it's not the
with,
worst.
Even better though, they didn't fire the guy. They like put out a statement. They were like,
"We're promoting him.
He is the next artist that we're." He's the next performance on ACL. Yeah. We're canceling Gary Clark Jr.'s episode. And this guy's just going to tweet for an hour.
Yeah, he's my hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, anyways, best score.
Yeah, we have four films remaining.
Yeah. Shannon, what went out last week?
What went out last week?
Two films.
It was a very
both of these films went out.
Double elimination.
Yeah.
It was... Please hold all of your tears and applause for the end. Let's see. We got Fright Night and House.
Yeah, I am crying and applauding at the same time.
No.
Shannon was right.
Tears of joy and sadness mixing together.
Yep.
Some kind of unholy matrimony.
There's a weird
Yeah, that,
in this
that
room.
Kind of was. I wasn't expecting those words.
What just
it did
happened?
Not work.
I don't know.
But there was a very palpable moment of silence.
Happy, sad.
Happy, sad. Confused.
Happy, sad, confused.
Go listen to that podcast. It's great.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Listen to this podcast.
Listen
it's already
to this podcast
great.
First.
Yeah, first you listen to every episode of this podcast 5 times.
And then, once you're maybe sick of it, which you won't be.
You won't be. You listen to it another time. And then, you can maybe check out the other one.
If you do this while staring at like a dot on your computer screen, you will start to see certain images appearing
it's
in front
true.
Of you.
I do think we
There's
should...
There's also subliminal messaging in every episode.
We should take a moment of silence for that 1 second of dead silence.
No, we shouldn't add more silence.
I don't think we need more dead air.
I think we should add a moment of loudness.
Okay.
That worked.
Did it peak?
I'm sure.
I don't know. I wasn't checking. I was looking at my notes for this.
Okay. Anyway, so our remaining films are Evil Dead, Suspiria, Halloween, and
Hereditary.
Yes.
You can see if you look at my notes, you can watch how tired I got throughout the day listening to all of these. Because horror scores are particularly emotionally draining.
They take it out of you. Especially one of these is exhausting to listen to in a good way.
End, but it's great.
It's also not the best like work music.
Yeah.
I listened to the majority of this at work. And
yeah.
It was distracting to say the least.
Andrew Ritchie, my boss at work, I was listening to, it was just the Halloween, the Michael Myers theme. And like, that's not particularly like, I don't think of that being particularly scary.
Yeah.
Because you hear it in so many places. But like, he did come up behind me and like, ask me a question while I was wearing headphones. And I didn't realize he was behind me. And I turned and was very frightened and had to explain why I like yelled at him and jumped out of my chair. So.
Did he laugh at you?
Yeah, he did.
Good.
That's good. That's
good. I could do just about anything.
I love Drew.
Drew would
great.
Laugh at me.
No, the scariest
thing. He's probably
thing
laughing at you right now.
Was
the comfort of his own home.
With his children.
With his children.
Just like, telling them about the fool.
Let me
at
tell
work.
You about this fool at work, Robbie.
No,
what fun.
The scariest thing is being at work when like all of your managers leave and it's just you, and then you're just hearing the
creaking
the vague,
noises and
the vague whispers and the Suspiria soundtrack, and you're just
I
like
was opening up this morning at our office listening to the Hereditary soundtrack, walking around empty hallways and turning on lights in rooms to like open up the office for everybody, and that was not a good feeling. Had to turn it off and
yeah, it's another
finish my
loneliness.
First tasks before I could jump back in.
Yes.
How did you guys listen to the scores?
I
with their
to them.
Ears.
I listen to
them.
Yeah.
With
my
ears. Heart.
One of them was walking to class. Also, doesn't put you in the best mood for school.
Ooh.
Let me tell you.
Believe it.
Nothing really gets the learning going like
the
demonic
like
didgeridoos.
Feeling like you're going to die. Put me in a weird funk that day.
Yeah. It is crazy, though, like how much and how effective some of these scores are at like putting you in that headspace and, you know.
Yep.
It'll literally take you out of wanting to do anything or feel joy. So, hey, that's the mark of a really good musician.
Yeah.
Really good writer.
So, who wants to start us off? Who wants to give their number one?
I can start.
Okay. What's the best score, Carter? What's the best one? All right,
so I judge my scores on two pretty basic principles. There's musicality. How much did I like the music itself?
Mm-hmm.
And then how well does it establish the tone? Because, as we know, score is just kind of a seasoning. It's an ingredient in an overall thing. So you can see a movie and be like, wow, the score is really good, but the movie was shit. And that's not necessarily, I mean, it's a good score, but it's not necessarily good in the context of the film. Because it's distracting you from the movie. Unless that was the intended purpose. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, so yeah, it's basically how well does it establish the mood and the tone, and then the actual musicality, how much I like the music. Because sometimes, you know, I'd be like, I don't know that I'd listen to this again, but it did such a good job with establishing tone, like Silence of the Lambs would be a great example. I'm not going to just listen to that soundtrack because I'm like, it's got
Phoenix is offended.
Weird noises.
I mean, this was back in season one hearing
but,
this
critique,
so...
But it's certainly, I was like, this is excellent at establishing a mood. I think I had it one or just like,
I think,
I think it was my winner that week.
A lot of what I had to do when evaluating these was go, if it isn't scary at times, what purpose is it serving?
Yeah.
And I had to kind of detach myself from like, ooh, is the music itself scary? And then, like, think about, you know, is it setting that tone for that movie?
So. Yeah. So, all of this said, my number one pick is something I found both incredibly musical and also incredibly spoopy and, I think, justifying of the movie itself, and that was Goblin's Suspiria score. It's my number one pick. I think this score in particular not only kind of establishes that kind of off-kilter, weird sound and kind of feeling that you get with Suspiria, there's also all kinds of just creepy, strange noises in the music with, like, whispers and whooshes and all kinds of interesting stuff, but then you also get this very, like psychedelic feel to it. So the music itself is fun to listen to, in addition to, I think, kind of establishing a mood, because that whole movie is a mood, and it's quite a trip, and I think the score really helps that.
So I put this score at my number two.
Okay.
So I do like it.
Yeah.
There are reasons, and we'll get to my number one in a bit, but I'll go ahead and talk about this. I think this is a fantastic progressive rock album, aside from the fact that it is the score for a film. I think it does a lot for the tone and feel of Suspiria, like as a unique film. Suspiria is very unique. This album is very unique. This is one of the few ones that I don't know if you could slot it into another scary movie and it would have the same effect.
That's true.
This is very much made for this movie. Also, because of that, like I said, there are moments of the score that aren't necessarily scary. This is exactly what I was talking about. There are a lot of, like, really fun things to listen to. The song Marcos really comes to mind there, and that it's like, this is like some progressive rock fucking vibes here. This is not, you know, and which does throw me off because it is like named after like the witch, the yeah. main antagonist, and it's not an antagonistic song. Not that I hold that necessarily against it, because tracks can be named whatever the fuck you want. Right. You know,
I think it's the music plays at the end.
It might be.
It plays a few times.
Fighting her, yeah.
It actually plays a few times, yeah.
It definitely has much more. If it is when she's fighting her, that definitely has kind of a
action vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have
confrontational.
Not, like, all that much written down for that particular piece, but I do have underlined this shit slaps twice. So I think that really speaks for itself. Like, there's nothing about that piece. And I mean, even within the larger context of the soundtrack, like everything about it is very progressive rock, very much a mood. And it takes you to that point where it's like, okay, this is not only a horror movie, but this is a horror movie made in the 70s moment.
Yeah.
Which either, you know,
in a, it's also a very European sound, like very European rock.
Back to Phoenix, like, the band.
Yeah. I kind of listed some standout tracks for each of them. Obviously the Suspiria theme is a very good one.
Yeah, very iconic.
Yeah, that alone probably puts this higher on our list for certain reasons. It's just, if you took everything else out, you were like, oh, well, we don't really have a soundtrack as much as we have this cool single that, like, plays throughout the film. That it's like, yeah, this establishes the tone. This is as much Suspiria as heavy breathing while everyone's sleeping in a ballet studio. Like, which is another good one. Size has
a
lot of
Size a lot.
Size has a lot of those, like, demonic whispers.
It's very moody.
Yes.
Blind Concert, which we were talking about before.
Which
we're not sure if it's in the movie.
I don't think it's in the movie.
But it's so good.
It is very good.
I really like Blind Concert. I'm pretty sad it's not featured more in the movie.
Death Valzer, which I believe is actually the piece they dance to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is very good and is a very different tone. Much scarier than a lot of the other stuff.
Yeah, especially in comparison to, like, Black Forest, which is on its own, like, just a really cool, moody piece that I go back and forth on whether it, like, is scary or if it fits the movie, but because it's so stylized, which I think is, you know, also the big case with the direction of the visuals in that movie, it ultimately does fit. But yeah, it was hard for me to separate with this soundtrack whether or not I just liked it because it was great to listen to, and it's a lot, you know, more kind to the ears, especially after having, you know, listened to Hereditary on loop and ruined a few days. But like, you know, it also does serve a lot of purpose for the story that it's constructing.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, and I'll use that as a segue. My number one was Hereditary because, boy, that shit fucked me up. Like,
it's and I keep really talking, quite something.
I keep talking about, like, how much Hereditary is unsettling more than it is, like, maybe outright scary. But, like, this, it is outright scary, but, like, no. How
I get what
you're unsettling
saying.
Of a mood it is throughout the entire time.
And it never lets
this
up.
This is very true for the soundtrack as well. I just put it on this morning as I was driving to work, and Funeral was playing, which is that first song is about 6 minutes and 10 seconds long.
Yeah.
And so that's a decent chunk of my commute. I had to turn it off because I just got very paranoid during it. And, like, when you're on the highway, you can't always hear, like, low drones and stuff, but, like, your subconscious can, and it was not fun. So I had to turn it off and then start it once I got to work again, and then I promptly turned it off and started it once I was finally at my, like, desk. But other, you know, standout tracks, Funeral is good, Brother and Sister mm-hmm. was good, Charlie, Party Crash, Book Burning, Joni, Chasing Peter, The Attic, Reborn.
Yeah, that's my favorite
fucking
track.
Fucking amazing. Yes.
That's my favorite track.
Sounds like something yeah. straight out of, like, The Rite of Spring,
yeah.
and then
yeah.
it,
oh, yeah.
like, murders you by the end.
I and then great. Hail Payment has just a ton. I had been looking at the track listing, and maybe it's because I was looking at it. I was so expecting, like, that chant to hit at the very end, and so there was just a lot of tension left, and, like, I was very tense at the end of the mm-hmm. score. But also, like, I noticed that there were some clear influences from prior, like, horror composers. Like, there's definitely a big John Carpenter influence. Tangerine Dream, Angelo Badalamenti are, like, a few that came to mind. But also, like, some contemporary acts. I caught, like, some Gorillaz influences. Aphex Twin, Thom Yorke. Like, I thought, yeah. overall, like, this... Sometimes you hear scores for horror movies, and they're not always that inspired, because horror movies tend to be pretty low budget on a regular basis, and so sometimes that money doesn't make it to the score. This, I feel like there was a lot of intent put into it, and a lot of thought into creating that mood. I loved it. I loved it. It's my number one, because it established the mood as much as the movie does.
I had it as my number two, and purely kind of on my musicality versus tone metric, this thing had tone out the fucking wazoo.
Yeah.
This one has tone at 200%. Musicality, I don't think I'm ever going to listen to this again. Maybe select tracks, but I will never put myself through this ever again. It's just not fun to listen to.
No.
It's deeply unsettling.
Yes.
Which is effective. I mean, it speaks to its effectiveness, which goes back to the tone setting, which is why it's so high. But I was just like, wow, golly, this is really quite something.
I figured, and usually I do... Usually we kind of measure those metrics about the same in other seasons, especially in, like, Star Wars or something, where you've got a lot of very, very similar things. This one I had to go with tone just because so much of this of these movies are the purpose of the score is to establish that tone. So, like, I mean, I would probably, if I were agreeing with you on, like, the weight of musicality, I'd probably flip Suspiria, but Hereditary ends up number one for me for that reason.
Yeah, I think I'll talk on Hereditary a bit later because I have it a little bit lower on my scale. But my number one was Suspiria. I know I've already said a little bit about it, but it's one of my favorite scores of all time. I love this score so much. To me, it's the best part of the movie, and I know a lot of people really like the colors of the movie, or like the cinematography, or maybe the production design, or the killings, or whatever. Just the art in general. I think the score is the best.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic. I think there's an extreme abundance and also of Glockenspiel.
Yes,
which
there is.
Every single movie it lacks way too much of.
Needs more Glockenspiel.
It's a film 101 lesson that if it has Glockenspiel in the score, it's a good. Yeah, it's a good
it's
movie.
It's a good.
It's a good
it's
movie.
So it's a good.
It's a good one. It's a good one, pal. It's so fun. I love the progressive rock. I love the progressive rock in it. I love the bass guitar. I love the whispers, the sounds, the light. I love every single track on here. All of them are bangers. And I also think that they all service the film. They're not just, like, great songs together. think they totally give the Suspiria movie such an identity and really like just not just how the art kind of separates it from the other movies of its time. I think the score also does too, which I think makes it kind of a perfect score because you can listen to it whenever and enjoy it. And then when you watch it with the movie, it serves its purpose like to a T. Yeah. That's why I think it's so, for me, so easily number one.
I think it almost assists the movie because there are some certain parts in the film where you're like, this is starting to kind of like dip pacing wise. Like you can feel it slowing down and the music will kick in and it'll kind of keep it going.
I mean, to me, it's the MVP of the movie.
Yeah.
It's the thing that keeps it going like the entire time. That's why you're having enjoyment for most of it.
Yeah. There are parts in that movie where maybe I think there's a lot of mythology that was in Argento's head on that didn't necessarily either it didn't make it into the cut or it didn't make it into the writing of the movie itself. But like sometimes there's confusing parts where you're like, I don't know how to feel about what's going on. And that music does kind of give you a good, I should be suspicious of this person, or whatever. Like, this is...
Yeah, my one critique musically is that there's this one, tom drum that plays during the Suspiria main track. Like, after it plays for a little bit longer, it goes on repeats and starts adding more instruments. The tom drum's really distracting, and I think not a good part of it. So once it gets to that, I'm like, all right, let's just cut the tom drum out and just go back to the other instruments.
More glockenspiel.
Yeah, more glock. You're distracting from the glock, to be honest.
Get, like, 10 glockenspiels in there.
Yeah, you're distracting from the glock, and that's unacceptable. But that's literally my only critique of the entire score.
Just get even louder bells.
Besides that, it's perfect. Yeah, exactly. Just
my only other critique... Blind Concert not featured heavily enough in the movie. That's
honestly,
it.
Yes.
Yeah, actually,
playing the whole time.
Yeah.
Where's my saxophone solo?
Yes, the saxophone
There's
solo.
There's saxophone in Blind Concert and Black Forest?
Yes, that sounds right to me. Don't
it's
put
not
there's someone Black who is, Forest, who is but not it is in the, present.
There's someone who is not credited, who is not a member of Goblin, who is credited as doing saxophone on both of those songs.
Just
so.
Like their rando friend who was like, sure, I'll do this gig. What's it for? Oh, just this movie.
I mean, for fun's talking points, because we've got time anyway, the story of like how Argento and Goblin started like making, because they scored another one of his films 2 years prior. And the story of how they ended up just working together. They were originally just booked as the band to perform this composer's works for I can't remember the name of the movie he did before this.
What, Deep Red?
Deep Red, yes. Before Deep Red. And that
movie I need to watch.
In that time span, Argento and the composer had a huge falling out. And he just went to them and was like, okay, so can you write a score in one day and then record it in another day? And then he ended up enjoying it so much that... they continued kind of a career-long partnership together. So I'm glad that they're creative, that they worked out creatively, and we got this score out of it later. You know?
Is there Glockenspiel in the Deep Red?
I don't know. I haven't listened to the Deep Red.
Okay.
There might be. There's. I mean,
I don't know if it's as heavily like present, but
it just needs to be there.
I'm also sure that it deserves.
I'm also very consistent on my glockenspiel praise. If you go back to season one, I praise the RoboCop soundtrack for having glockenspiel in it.
I'm sure you
so
did.
I don't want people calling me out saying this is a bit. Glockenspiel is
that's
a great
it's,
instrument.
That's how you know it's the real Phoenix. We didn't get an imposter back.
Yeah,
he's praising the glockenspiel.
It's a good instrument and it needs more presence in the
world. How
much
did you play it?
For about 7 years.
Yeah.
So, yes, there is a guy who is credited as specifically drums and various percussion.
Dope.
So, he is a member of Goblin who probably plays the
glockenspiel. What's Goblin doing now, though?
Last year, they toured the original Suspiria album along with the release of the 2018 movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of did a live score thing with the 1977 movie
cool.
playing.
Yeah, I think I did see that.
More like Goblin spiel. All right, but Shannon, what's your number one?
They're still making movies, or making music, so. Yeah.
Which is good. That makes me happy.
It's reminiscent of Toto's Dune score, which is also amazing.
Yes!
Adding that to my fall 2019 playlist right now.
Well, I was going to say, now we just have to add Dune to something so we can
watch
somebody,
it.
Somebody, please, add Dune to something.
Maybe that'll be
something.
the next season. Who knows?
Yeah, but my top pick was Suspiria. So I'm going to talk about my number two a little bit because I feel like we've talked about Suspiria a lot, which is Hereditary. The only reason that Hereditary did not, because I really loved these two scores.
These were my two favorites, beyond a doubt.
By and large. Literally the only
Phoenix
reason
disagrees.
With Hereditary that I was a little like, I had written down were the pieces Steve and Lee's things. They're just, they were a little too ambient for me. They were not hitting correctly. And I was just like, okay, let's get through these pieces. But with these two scores,
love ambience.
It just depends on the day.
Someone has to
I could go back and forth whether, you know, Suspiria would be winning or Hereditary, but today it was, and before I arrived, it was Suspiria. So, but I'm absolutely in love with all of, you know, this like symphony of industrial grinding, very mechanistic sounds. My favorite is the call out to like the demonic didgeridoo that like plays at the end.
Yes.
And when the didgeridoo kicks in,
the crackling like horror strings that like finish at the end. And I also have written down, there's like this really wonderful like edgy bass groove in Seance Sleepwalking that just continues and drives. It's like a much lighter Suspiria bass groove, which is appropriate, I think, for the or for Hereditary versus Suspiria. But I really don't have enough good things to say about the score. I can only imagine what it was like in the creative meetings between Ari Aster and I can't remember his name.
Colin
Atwell? No, I'm thinking of somebody else.
I had a wild story about the Hereditary score.
Okay, go for it.
I was listening to it I was listening to it in my car driving home from school.
Colin Stetson.
And I drive a convertible, and I had to turn the music up to hear like the low drones and stuff. So it was playing pretty loud out of my car, and got some weird looks from pedestrians and bicyclists.
See,
of being like,
"Are you okay?
What are you doing?" And then there was like satanic like chants and whispers, and then like the didgeridoo. And there was one guy on a bike next to me at a stoplight who literally looked at me and was like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
Did you have your top down?
Yes.
Well, that's your first problem.
It was a beautiful day. I wasn't going to drive with the top up.
Then you deserved those looks. I'm sorry.
Hereditary.
Yeah.
You can't act surprised.
I would have given you looks.
I just thought it was funny. It was funny for me.
Yeah, it's a funny story.
Okay, the only thing appropriate to listen to that loud with a convertible top down is the Phantom of the Opera 2015 anniversary edition.
ABBA also is good.
Yeah, I was going to say ABBA is good.
I get a lot of people who really like it when I play ABBA.
But Hereditary was not it.
Tom Petty Hall &
Oates
would be
probably pretty good.
Hall & Oates.
Yeah,
Tom
Hall & Oates are good.
Fleetwood Mac.
Mm-hmm. All good.
Yeah.
Hereditary soundtrack? Not good.
Not good convertible music. Very good score.
Very good music. Thank you, Colin Stetson.
Phoenix, talk about the Hereditary score and tell us where you put it, because I'm about to give us a break after you do that.
Okay, so I was struggling on it being the third or fourth spot, and I ended up giving it the third spot. By a hair. And the only reason I will say why is because while I think all of these scores are really good, I struggled with the Hereditary score because I feel like, well, one of my criteria for these scores was identity. And I feel like this one to me of the other four had the least like lack of an identity or lack of a connection, or not a connection to the movie, but like it, like a real, like physical, tangible feeling of the movie to me. It just felt like, sometimes it felt like generic ambience, and sometimes it felt like just drones on, just a lot of crescendos and decrescendos, a lot of like silence and then rising. And I was torn on it because while it is good ambiance, it definitely can sometimes feel like something I've heard before. And definitely if you took a track from this and played it, I wouldn't know that it was a Hereditary track. I would just think it was some kind of droning or some kind of something that I've heard from a horror movie before. And that, to me, is a big problem when discussing these, because I feel like all of these soundtracks could be have very heavy ties to the movie and be very independent on them of themselves. And besides Reborn, which I think is my favorite track of the whole thing, and the one where I really feel like, oh, this is the movie. Like, I can feel it in the song. The others I feel like are just a lot more subtle or just a lot more absent with its identity and feeling less like generic and more its own thing.
Yeah.
And that was just my take on it.
Hard disagree. So. Yeah, so I mean, where it ends up falling is Suspiria number one, Hereditary number two. We can talk about this off air. Yeah. I don't need to like.
I see where you're coming from.
I don't, because I am one of those people that I will call out like generic ambience in a score. I hate the fucking Prestige score. That is generic ambience.
Yeah. That's hardly a score.
That's hardly a score. That's not. I don't know if maybe. I'm just trying to think of like why I can't think of the reasons why you don't feel the same connection to the movie that I do listening to it. Like,
to me, like there are just times when it's just like, I mean, like just scrambling noise, which is stuff that I've heard used many times before. And it's not to say that's a bad score. I just definitely think of the four that we're talking about that it's like, it doesn't feel the most original.
Like, here's what I wonder, too, about the score. I think it does depend on your listening environment. This is not, while we do talk about having listened to it, you know, walking to class or with the convertible roof down or whatever, it requires a certain, like, sonic environment. And I was finding, like, probably not a good idea, at least, to be listening to this soundtrack when I'm, like, cooking or doing something loud. Like, there is a lot of nuance just in general that I think can be lost and that can either be written off as, you know, generic ambience or, like, you know, bombardment of sound, which I kind of get sometimes because there are a couple of pieces in the score that I'm like, well, I guess they serve a purpose in the narrative, but I don't really see the nuance particularly in like the two pieces I listed, Steve and Lee's things. I'm like, I'm glad I listened to them, but you know, I'm moving on and we'll never have to revisit them. But yeah, going back to the idea that, you know, like if you're watching a show that's really dark, you probably want to calibrate your screen to the, you know, proper settings so that you can enjoy the gradient of darkness, and kind of the same thing with,
you know, I was definitely listening to this with my noise canceling headphones on doing mindless work that I was able to more pay attention to the score, but also like, so I can see that being a very, like, hearing those nuances. But also, like, I think that we do get a sheer just, we get a larger amount of score on this album compared to something like Suspiria, where we get eight tracks that really, that are used over in motifs or, like, pulled out from it throughout the film to, like, and to mishmash it and make it, a, you know, a very complete piece with the film. Whereas I think we probably got
almost a complete score.
Almost a complete score with this. So, I mean, I can feel like there are probably points where, like, just like a movie has its dips into, you know, right now the score doesn't need to be loud and explaining what's going on. People are very explicitly yelling at each other about what's going on. So, I can see where you're coming from when you take it all in as a whole and compare it to the other scores that we have here. But overall, I disagree.
Yeah.
It's okay.
It's the most serviceable of the scores, which is why I gave it the third spot, because I thought of all these scores, it's definitely the one that really like keeps the atmosphere of the movie and kind of drives it, keeps you on its edge when it wants to, keeps you relaxed when it wants to. It kind of creates these like creepy vibes, and it has this like you know, it's got these moments and that it generates from the score. But I just, I just think at times I can just feel like it's stuff I've heard before, and maybe not exactly, but definitely in like different in style. And so I have to just, I have to knock it for it.
That was certainly my expectation with it. But as soon as I started, like, I was like, I don't really remember the Hereditary score. I feel like it's just going to be like kind of generic. And then as soon as it started playing, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this now.
The last thing I'll give to it before we take a quick break is it definitely, as being probably the newest film on our, is the newest film remaining at this point. It had the most influences to pull from, whereas, and we'll talk about some of the other scores, but especially Suspiria, like it's not drawing on inspirations as much as it is, like, they're using the stylistic, you know, they're using Goblin stylistic influences for that. But Goblin is making, you know, we're a Goblin and we're making a horror movie score. Same with, like, John Carpenter and Halloween. This one definitely wears its influences on its sleeve. And that can, I mean, just depending on day you're listening to it or how, you know, deep you're diving into it, can probably turn into, like, oh, I've heard this before because it does sound like Aphex Twin or whatever. Like, it sounds like, you know, something else that I've listened to. Like, so I see where you're coming from. I disagree. Yeah. It doesn't really change the ranking because we balance each other out, because I have it at 1, you have it at 3.
Yeah, I dropped it at 3, so it's...
Yeah. Yeah. It stays at 2.
And we'll take a quick break.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Before we get back into the action, I just wanted to tell you about a show we have here on the 5208 Media Network called Tap Heads. That's right. Tap Heads is a show hosted by yours truly, Robbie DeShazer, along with Carter Spilliards from Film Fracas and our good friend Wendy Lopez. We get together every other week and we drink a whole bunch of beers and talk about what we like about them, what we don't like about them, what we're learning about beers. There's just so much fun to be had. We've tried a whole bunch of different breweries, a whole bunch of different types of styles of beers. We're just having a lot of fun doing this, and I think that you guys should go check it out. So right after you listen to the second half of this episode, head on over to anchor.fm/tapheads. And go listen to our most recent episode. We had a lot of fun making it, and we hope you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. All right, get back to the action.
Okay.
Consume, you consumers. And that was my impression of Mickey Mouse.
It was bad. It was bad.
Recording. Man. How long have we been recording?
21 seconds.
Now Bob Iger's not coming on the podcast.
Yes, he will. He's doing his book tour. Of course he's going to come on. He's hitting all the major stops.
Chase Serrano beat him, though, on the New York Times bestseller, so suck it, Bob Iger. You suck.
He was still on the list, though.
Shout out to Chase Serrano. Get Shay to come on the podcast.
Yeah, that would actually be
Chase Serrano,
amazing.
Please come
prove
on this
that
podcast.
You're not the same person, Phoenix.
Yeah, be in two places at the same time.
Okay.
I mean, like right now?
I mean, be in one place at the same time.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah, both of you.
Yeah. They are in two places.
It's late, y'all. I've had
right
a long
now,
day
Shay
of doing
is
nothing.
On his book tour, and you are here.
Supposedly.
I mean, you are definitely. my thing is not that you're the same person at the same time. It's that
you're
Shay is a future
times.
Version of Phoenix that time traveled back.
And we can't be in the same room because it'll create
a paradox.
A paradox,
yeah. Yeah, Shay's hand will start disappearing in front
That's
of his fair. Face.
That's why he didn't hire me when I applied to be his assistant.
But he didn't email to you. He was like, oh shit, I remember when this happened in the past.
Because that won't cause a paradox.
It'll What's just, happened, happened.
Yeah.
We learned this from Lost, Phoenix.
It was weird, though. You got the email back in your own inbox?
Yeah.
Oh.
Just I thought that was strange.
More. Didn't think about that, but so yeah, you're right.
All right, y'all.
Yeah, so when we left off, we were talking about movies.
I had number one, Suspiria. Number two, Hereditary.
What's the opposite of hereditary in, like, biology? It's either, like, it's hereditary or it's, like, non...
Learned?
Learned?
Yeah.
Is that it? Okay, so what...
So the difference between a genetic and a learned trait.
Oh, okay. Well, anybody got, like, the opposite Latin cognate of Suspiria?
Glockenspiel.
Glockenspiel is number one. At number two is learned.
Learned.
Okay. Where are we at now?
I guess it's just him at number two, because I'm the only one who has
chaotic
it.
Energy. This whole episode is making me uncomfortable.
Acquired is another
antonym. Acquired. Yeah. It's not hereditary. It's acquired.
Okay.
Anywho, another. My number three. Well,
what about my number two?
Was doesn't matter.
All right.
What's your number two, Phoenix?
Phoenix, what's your number two?
I don't want to talk about it anymore. I'm just, my number two is The Evil Dead, which means if you're keeping track, Halloween is my number four.
Don't say that.
I mean, they'll know.
I mean,
well, people were.
Yeah, let them
track.
Keep track. Don't tell them.
Well. That You've cat's out of the bag. I won't talk about it yet, though.
Gone out and doxed your fourth pick.
I'll hold back and just say that Evil Dead was my second pick.
I can... Do you want me to read my notes on Evil Dead to you?
Yeah, go for it.
It's aight.
Cool.
I told you, like, you could tell that I got more and more tired throughout the day. I got to Evil Dead and wrote, it's aight.
I don't know. I like the vibes of it. It's, like, haunting, but it also kind of keeps its, like, I mean, Janet said off mic, but it kind of keeps its, like, low-budget vibes that the movie currently, like, definitely has.
It does.
But it's, you know, it's haunting. It's serviceable. It surprisingly wasn't a chore to listen to, like, some of these others were to me. Like, it was, you know, it was quick, but there were some cool moments, like some cool percussion-y parts, some cool...
Yeah.
Cool strings.
Cool strings. Like, plucking. a lot of plucks going on.
Okay.
That was great.
It's a nice motif.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can talk about why... Actually, no, we'll just talk about my number three.
My number three was Evil Dead.
Okay.
So I can keep talking about it.
Go for it.
I found this one... This is the only one of these scores that I would describe as truly haunting. I was like, this sounds kind of ghoulish and, like, spooky. This is a very kind of conventional spooky sound.
Yeah.
And I dug it. I thought it was very, very pretty. Especially, it was almost, like, incongruent with the movie. With how pretty the sound of the music was versus the actual movie itself. But yeah, I agree. It kind of maintained that low budget feel. I thought it was very striking at times, and just all around very solid. I thought it was a really well rounded score, unlike another score. But we'll get to that.
So, my number three was actually Halloween because I didn't like the Evil Dead score. I thought it was bad, honestly. I thought it didn't fit the movie at all.
Your one note was that it was aight.
No, I mean, like, it's aight, but, like, it's not... I don't think it was... I don't want to ever listen to it ever again. Like, it was totally fine for the movie, but it's... I'm going to say some words that you said about Hereditary.
The Evil Dead.
I felt very generic at times. There were some... Mm-hmm. Parts where it felt pretty and it felt incongruent with the, like, actual tone of the film, and it just felt like, oh, this is a score for a movie. There were some parts I actually enjoyed about it quite a bit, like those very percussion-y parts during the Dawn of the Evil Dead and the plucks that were in it during Rape of the Vines that were pretty cool. But also at the same time, like, the cacophony of plucks and, like, detuned basses, like, with a bow being dragged across them, it sounds super generic horror to me. It sounds like every trailer for every, you know, Blumhouse, you know, someone stuck somewhere movie that, or, like, there's a zombie movie that I've ever seen. To that degree, I understand why people might put Halloween below it. And I am not going to fight too hard for this, but I had to make my points be known that I think it's a pretty generic score. I think we talked about, like, low-budget horror movies and, like, putting the budget not going necessarily towards that score or maybe even, like, getting a friend to do it for, like, pretty cheap and or free. I think this is very much the case here, and I think it deserved a lot better than it got.
I will say that's probably my biggest problem. That's why it's obviously three and not higher, is that I did think it was fairly generic. It's one that, as Robbie, you like to point out often when we do this, if you plopped it in another movie, would it work? And this one, I think, would definitely work in another kind of low-budget horror film. But going back to, like, it still fits the movie really well in it, like, for what it is, and I think the musicality's there. I think it's a really well-written score, and it's one I would listen to again. So that's where I would have knocked it down. Yeah. So I also agree that it is pretty generic.
Yeah, if you put it into the argument of could you put fit it in another movie, I can kind of side with that you probably could.
Yeah.
But I still think it holds some kind of identity to what the Evil Dead movie was too. Like, if
and the parts that I really liked about it, I feel like are very much have that identity of the Evil Dead, but I felt like it was so much more outweighed by generic string sections or this sounds kind of creepy, let's put it in here. But I think some of those sounds that go along, especially with all the like the Kandarian stuff, like the dagger and the stuff that's supposed to play the book, stuff that's supposed to play the first time someone gets possessed by a deadite, those are very much in line with what the movie is to me. Yeah. But there's some other things that I'm like, oh, this is generic horror action. Like,
I will say, this doesn't really speak to the score, but it is interesting because Joe DeLuca, who did the score for the first Evil Dead, also does the score for Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, as well as the show Ash vs. Evil Dead. So there's remarkable musical consistency if you listen to subsequent scores.
Yes.
Interesting point.
Yeah. No. I would also just say that I guess the reason – reasoning for putting it at my number two spot is more just I have certain qualms that I've with the other two movies, which I've already said about Hereditary, and I have some qualms about this one, but I think when I just compare them that this one just I can forgive more than the others, and that's I don't really feel that strongly about the Evil Dead soundtrack or the Evil Dead score. Like, it's, I do enjoy it, I enjoy all the scores here actually, but I can see the problems that maybe some other people would share with it.
Yeah. I don't see it being number two, especially when you compare, like, the problems that you had with the Hereditary score to the problems that I think that are very present and evident in the Evil Dead score. I think it's worth taking a look and seeing maybe if you would flip those, but not that it matters, but...
Yeah, maybe. I guess we talked about it off mic, but I was debating on these... movies getting like flipped. I was kind of torn on my rankings for them, but I mean, that's something. I'll stick with it for now. Yeah. Evil Dead 2, Hereditary 3, Shannon.
So, where I was at with these last two movies, movie scores, was really like trying to see. What am I trying to say here? Okay. I had Halloween as number 3, and I had The Evil Dead as number 4. And originally, I thought I was going to stick with Halloween as the bottom slot just because it is very repetitive. I think its icon status is almost a disservice to it a little bit. You know, there really are only two themes.
There's
and they do
three
get
themes, I think.
That third one.
Two and a half.
And a half themes, and they get repeated ad nauseum.
Oh, for sure.
It's like, yep. They're milking that. And I get it. If you come up with a really good motif, you're going to use it for all it's worth. It's a lot easier, and it makes your job as a composer a whole lot easier.
Yeah. Especially when you're also directing and writing.
Exactly. Yeah. So
almost,
I don't...
He should have gotten someone else to write it.
Yeah.
Almost like that was the case.
Like, could have written the motifs and then said, here are my motifs, make the rest of the score.
I mean,
this is Halloween is also, I think, a very good example of working very well in practice in the movie and maybe not working as an album.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's also true.
I will agree with that wholeheartedly. But then after having listened to the Evil Dead soundtrack and finding a place to put that in the mix, where I come to these, to my conclusion in putting the movies as I've arranged them, is that Halloween, even though the motifs are repeated ad nauseum, I think they do more narrative work in a smaller space of time than The Evil Dead, for all of its kind of like watered down, generic, here's a stock horror soundtrack, does over the course of 30 minutes, you know. I would call Halloween much more efficient, even if it is a bit repetitive, a little too consistent, which was really the only reason that I put Halloween above. But once again, I'm not going to duke it out to the death for these two films.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we can talk about it now. I had Halloween last. And
oh, so we're flipped.
Yeah.
Not totally.
I have The Evil Dead at 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where I'm at with this is it was too repetitive to me. And like I said, it's almost like he could have written those motifs, still had them in the movie, and then they could have, you know, built a score around that. And it's, like you said, it certainly works well in the movie. And it does establish a tone to a degree. I mean, at least when those play, you know, to worry about Michael Myers being behind you kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or to be anxious. They make you really anxious. But the musicality, I mean, yes, for the two songs, it's there. But for the rest of it, leaves quite a bit to be desired. And I think I finally understand. I still don't agree with, but I understand yours and Brett's point about Pirates of the Caribbean now.
Yeah, is this why you were mad?
Yes.
You were mad. Yes, it's
because
it does have a similar problem.
Because I think Pirates of the Caribbean has at least 5 or 6 distinct themes. Does it use all of them frequently? Yes, but there's still multiple distinct themes, not just one. However,
every track does almost every track on that score does go back to the bum. But we won't talk about
whatever.
That. It gets covered.
I have support now, Robbie.
Yep, and so, I lost mine.
Now you're with me.
Oh yeah, Phoenix just wasn't riding as hard as Brett.
Yeah, I was like, I like it enough,
but
I was like, definitely not.
On not an
their
even
pirates. I finally have another fighter in this fight. It doesn't matter.
I'll call.
I'll put Brett on speakerphone
it's
right
fine.
Now. I will
it's
Skype
a
him in.
Fine.
Brett the Rock Johnson. Anyway,
it's okay.
But anyway, I understand where you're coming from now when you talked about that, because I literally was like, "Oh, we're doing this again, and again, and
yes,
again."
This is worse at that than.
And I think this is perhaps the most egregious that I've ever heard. And so that's where I'm literally like, it's not the movie's fault. It's not necessarily the score's fault. It's the fact that it was made the way it was. It's almost circumstantial.
Yeah.
And I think once again, I'm really not counting the icon status into it because I love it. I mean, I love the Halloween theme. It's truly iconic.
Yeah.
But
I try not to count the icon status, but I tried to fit in a little bit of the historical context.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that this did establish kind of the horror sound
that's
that was
true.
Predominant from the late 70s through the
but
early 90s.
Once again, with anything that starts something, it's almost...
Certainly always improved
at a
upon later.
It's improved upon later. So it's, kind of fundamentally
first.
At a disadvantage for being the first. So that's where I'm at with that. I'm pretty firm on it being my number 4.
I can't remember a single Fracas episode where I've hated myself so much than this one.
Yeah, I really was. Like, remember before we started, I said I'm not happy about my rankings.
Yeah,
but I'm gonna keep them.
Yeah, I like. I mean, you guys know me, and I'm sure the listeners have probably picked up on it. I love the Halloween movie, and I especially love the Halloween score. But I have to put it forth because of the all the reasons that you said that it's so like. Annoyingly repetitive. It's unacceptably repetitive, to be honest with you. It shouldn't be that they shouldn't repeat the tune that many times. And in that same way, it's not even there's things added or instruments added or sometimes tempo slowed. I mean, it's maybe slowed by like I don't know, like maybe 10 beats per second. It's never really
ten beats per minute.
Sorry.
Minute.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh.
but it's just like, ridiculous. It's
yeah.
It really did deserve better. Like we talk about the Evil Dead deserving better, but like
it's absurd. And one of the times that it doesn't repeat the main two themes. I mean, I do think there is a third one. I know you guys were like, the third one. There are three, but the times it doesn't use the other themes, there's sometimes just straight up going chromatically down. Every note, to the point where it's like, is this even
music?
Creativity?
Yeah. This is just a chromatic scale.
You're just playing the notes like down on a scale. Like it is so at times so disappointingly uncreative, and so like really hard to get through. And I never thought I would say that about the Halloween score, but actually just sitting down and listening to it, it's really difficult to listen to the whole thing. I wanted to back out so many times, but I was like, no, I've got to go the whole time for the podcast. And while I love Laurie's theme and I love the Halloween theme, I think they're incredible. And I think in the movie, they're great and everything. They're just so bad. Like the soundtrack is so bad at the end because it's just heard so many times that you just get sick of it. And it makes me sad, to be honest.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. And this is maybe my qualm I've had with this category ever since the beginning of the show, which is that I don't know if we are judging it based on how it's put in the soundtrack versus how it is used in the movie, because I think this is the reason that I think I gave a little bit more to Halloween was because of how effectively the score is used in the movie, that I didn't really care so much about like whether this track was actually called Michael Kills Judith or if it was just, you know, the Halloween theme or what. It's stretches of time that were, I think, arbitrarily put on a score that really exists and has like three themes. And if you break it down like that, I don't know where that ends up with it. But
I'd say it's almost not a score.
Yeah. It's more of a score than the Prestige. Or
just musical. That's true. The Prestige isn't. It doesn't have a score. It's just weird noises for. Not even weird. Just low ambient noises.
It's like synchronized breathing.
It's bad. It's bad. Is what it is. Real bad.
Anyway, I think I tried to give some credence to how well it works. It services the movie itself, and because of that, that is where you know, and weighing that with. In regards to also having this soundtrack that is maybe not well made. So when I put that weight in, that's also where movies like Hereditary and Suspiria really jumped up and why there's kind of two tiers to this for me, is that I see Hereditary and Suspiria being both creative and really servicing their films well in the places that they're used, whereas Halloween really services the film, but it doesn't work well as like a listening experience on its own, and whereas I feel like Evil Dead is so generic that it falls to the bottom of my list that it doesn't necessarily... I feel like it doesn't... Other than a handful of parts, I feel like it doesn't have that identity of the movie. It feels very generic horror, and it while it services the movie fine, but it doesn't stand out in any way to me. And so in the sense that it was kind of a slog to get through as an album, I don't particularly remember being wowed by it watching the movie. That's why I think Evil Dead really landed flat for me. On this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately my apathy for that soundtrack outweighed my irritation bordering on anger for the injustice of only using two themes repetitively for Halloween.
Two themes repetitively and one theme sparingly.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's just kind of where you fall on the apathy anger spectrum.
Well, as it stands
because of Phoenix's
hot, I killed Michael Myers.
Phoenix killed Michael Myers.
Are we officially going with... I guess, do we have to by numbers?
Yes.
Yeah, there's no tiebreaker.
There's no tiebreaker.
He is the tiebreaker.
He
put Evil Dead at 2. Yeah. That means it's at 3.
I guess it is.
So somebody's got to have a hot take.
That really...
It's very on brand.
To be honest, that really opened up the last round pretty wide open.
Yeah.
Because I definitely was like, I think Halloween's the movie to beat in the last round.
No more.
Y'all, I'm pissed about this. I'm going to be honest. Phoenix, I don't think that was a good take.
I stand by it.
This is part of the
fracas.
That's
important. That is
fracasing. Yeah. We got to get heated.
We got to have at least one unpopular category.
For the content. This is classic film fracas, though.
This
wouldn't be a film fracas.
Kill Bill going out on Best Fight. This is The Shining losing jaw-dropping moment.
It wouldn't be a film fracas season if there wasn't one egregious elimination.
We can talk about it off air.
It's fine. It's just the notion of Halloween not making it to the final round of Halloween movies.
Well,
no,
I'm not even pissed that
Evil Dead is his number 2 and that
not even that. I mean,
but Fright Night's not in the mix. Like there's got to be some sort of gauge with.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I think it's just the idea just on a blanket statement of Halloween getting eliminated for its score is hilarious
because it's also iconic.
It's probably what everyone thinks of before they think of the movie. They think of the score. But them's the breaks.
That's the way the cookie crumbles, kid.
So yeah, as we're saying goodbye to Halloween, poor Michael Myers drowned in a room full of blood.
Smothered.
Or did his head turn into a watermelon?
No, we've already done that one. We've done that.
Oh, which one have we not done?
Well, we've done getting smothered.
His eyeball ends up
in the
mouth.
In the mouth.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
We did bananas, right?
Hello.
We did bananas. Did we do getting microwave zapped by the cat's screen flash?
No, we definitely have not done that one.
Because then she closes her eye and then opens and then she opens it back up.
I don't know.
I think that's what happens. I think it's her eye. I just watched this movie.
We're rewatching Home.
We're watching it tomorrow.
All right, then.
But yeah, goodbye, Halloween. John Carpenter's iconic horror film.
I already miss you.
I already miss you, too. I've made a huge mistake.
Yep.
But, that's that. So, next week, Best Picture. Last three films. It's wide open.
It's The Evil Dead. Or
it's
Hereditary.
Evil Dead, Hereditary, or Suspiria.
Or Suspiria.
Shit's wide open, y'all.
Yeah, I don't even know.
I have no idea. Man. So that's that.
What exciting podcasting.
You can
can see the thrilling conclusion.
You can find me on Twitter. I tweet now.
He does.
At CA Spillier. It's like spill something you got in NS. Yeah. Or follow me on Letterboxd. I think it's also CA Spillier or Silent Wall or something like that. But yeah, follow me there to get all of my hot takes. I am Silent Walrus, all one word.
Okay. What's your recommendation?
I'm recommending this week, I didn't do the Paul Rudd show yet, right?
No, we talked about that on a different thing.
Different thing. My recommendation this week is the Netflix original Living with Yourself.
Yes.
That's what it's called.
Yeah.
The new Paul Rudd show on Netflix. It's 8 episodes.
Starring Paul Rudd.
All between 20 and 30 minutes.
Yes. And Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd and Paul Rudd. It's very good. I actually quite enjoyed the whole thing. It's kind of like Office Space mixed with sci-fi a little bit. And it's surprisingly dramatic, I found. There was a lot more kind of drama and human moments. And some really great performances from Paul Rudd. Flexing both his comedic and dramatic chops, as well as the actress who plays his wife, who has an Irish name that I have trouble pronouncing, but she's also very good.
I watched the first 4 episodes back in San Antonio, and I enjoy it a lot, but I can't help but feel like it suffers a little bit from, like, all Netflix shows, which is if Netflix just had a development team, it could have been really, really good.
Yes.
But instead, it's just pretty good.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, which is fine.
Yeah, I quite enjoy it, though.
Yeah, it's fun.
I really
Paul Rudd's great.
Yeah, I really liked the ending.
Yeah, I need to finish it. I haven't finished it, but yeah, it's enjoyable.
It also chugs along at a very great pace.
Yes.
I will say, though, it bothers me because you don't get, like Paul Rudd at 100% until, like, the finale. There's, like, one scene where I'm like, that's the Paul Rudd I've been waiting for this whole season. Where has he been? But yeah, go watch it. It's good.
He's been living with himself.
Yes.
Whoa.
Wow.
Shannon?
Oh, no. I was looking up the actress in Living with Yourself, and it pulled up her Twitter, and the last tweet, I guess, that she tweeted 2 days ago was, "I'm not drinking because I'm on antibiotics, so I'll only have a few drinks. I already like this woman. I don't know how to say her name."
See?
A-I-S-L-I-N-G.
Aisling.
The S is definitely not pronounced.
Aisling? Eileen?
Eileen?
And they list her middle name, and it's a big old Irish.
I couldn't even try it.
But yeah, so maybe follow her. She's at We Miss B on Twitter.
She's a comedian. She's a pretty successful
comedian. So promoting her sounds like a wonderful person, as well as Paul Rudd.
And I have to look up how to say her name.
But anyway. Okay, so I guess maybe I'll go next. Y'all can follow me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5. That is ZedsDead5, like the...
The DJ.
The DJ, unfortunately, not the actor in, or the, yeah, whatever. We've overused that one a little bit, but I still like it. It's fine. What else? Yes, I also do a blog called 90 Films Movie Reviews that I think about adding to and then don't, and then have ideas and then don't. So eventually I'll post something else and it'll be great. But that's 90films.co. You can check out the first 3 articles I have posted. Maybe compel me to write some more. I'm going to be recommending Shoplifters this week, which is one of the most powerful, tearful, incredibly visually crafted films I've seen. Definitely this year. And I can already see this being one of my, like, favorite movies of my 20s. This is the fantastic film directed by Hirokazu Koreeda. My exact Letterboxd review is, quote, "Shoplifters is a weapon of mass emotion," and that's really all I have to say about that. I have nothing else to expand. Just go watch it. It's on Hulu right now, and it will definitely destroy you in many ways, but very well worth it. Yes.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Shoplifters. Yeah, I'll probably check it out.
I've been meaning to see it.
Yeah, I've heard it's really great. I am at BombAssPhoenix on Twitter. I hope to tweet things you like. Follow me there. Yell at me.
You can tweet at each other now because I'm tweeting.
Yeah, I can tweet at Carter. And like I tweet at Shannon
Carter's
and Robbie.
Carter's out of Twitter this whole time. I don't know why this is
He's never really
tweeted.
It's
not a revelation.
Though.
I've had a Twitter.
I've
had a Twitter for years. Like not long after Twitter was made.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
you were the film, that film wizard.
I was.
But you actually tweet now. Is the news.
The difference. I finally. Yeah. Flipped a switch and was like, I guess I'll tweet now.
Yeah. This is me now.
It's good. Follow me at BombAssPhoenix. Yell at me if you're mad about Halloween getting eliminated because it's my fault.
Yes,
but,
it is.
And I take full blame for it.
I mean, I also put it last, so.
Yes.
Partially my fault.
We could have maybe saved it if I put it.
We'll talk about this afterwards. Third,
but it's fine.
Is it?
Yes.
Yes, it's fine.
That is how the frack is.
Yeah, them's the brains. So the film I'm recommending is In the Mood for Love, which is directed by Wong Kar-wai. I just got the Criterion Blu-ray the other day after the flash sale that they had. And it's wonderful. It's such a good movie. If you like movies where there's a couple and you fall in love with the couple as they fall in love and then you cry at the end, this is the perfect movie for you to watch because it is so captivating with these two main leads and you just grow together. You want them to succeed. And then I won't spoil it, but you know, tears are shed and it's such a beautiful movie.
I recommend
everyone see it. Well, you will watch it and cry if that's what you're at.
Will you cry?
I got close. I would say I probably did. I don't remember
that I've seen you cry in a movie.
It's rare. I got close for this one though. It's brutal, but check it out. It's on Canopy if you don't want to buy the Blu-ray before
destroying
trying it.
Your life.
Yeah, if you don't want to spend $40 and risk watching a movie, you can if you have a Canopy account or a Criterion Channel account, you can stream it there. But it's really good, and yeah,
cool. Thank you, Phoenix. I will check that one out as well.
You should.
You can follow me on Twitter at Robbie DeShazer. I tweet there mostly about the Astros right now. They're in the World Series. They're behind by one in the frickin' top of the ninth right now.
Go Stros.
When this comes out, I'll have already been to my one World Series game that I'm going to. So catch me there. No. Other than that, my recommendation this week... Yeah, I'm going to go with something because next week we'll put out the final episode actually the day after Halloween. So if you want to watch something kind of spooky before you end your Halloween season, whether it's with us or just on Halloween night, and you're like me and you like HBO docs from the 1990s, check out Paradise Lost, The Child Murders at Robin Hood Hills. Such a fucking fantastic documentary. Got some true crime elements, got... Just there's a lot going on. If you love kind of looking back at like the Satanic Panic and looking at how ridiculous that stuff was, it's just good. It also has some kind of Blair Witchy vibes before Blair Witch. So other than that, this has been the episode.
Yep,
that's it.
That's the whole shebang.
Halloween's gone. We're back next week with Best Picture.
Tune in for that. Will it be The Evil Dead? Will it be Hereditary? Will it be
Suspiria?
We'll find out.
Won't it be Halloween?
It won't be Halloween.
It'll be one of those three movies.
Yeah. All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thanks to Carter Spilliards, Phoenix Arola, and Shannon Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever it is you listen. It really does help get the word out about the show. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. Media.